I put this slide up first. It's actually a quote from the Surgeon General that appears in public health reports in her editorial about care for people with HIV. And it's sometimes worth reading some slides. While good oral health is important to the well-being of all population groups, it is especially critical for people living with HIV and AIDS. Inadequate oral health care can undermine HIV treatment and diminish quality of life, yet many individuals living with HIV are not receiving the necessary oral health care that would optimize their treatment. I must say that due to advocacy and other reasons, we actually have a system of care in place for uninsured and underinsured people living with HIV and still have a hard time getting them into care. So we're at a different level than some of the programs I'm starting in Atlanta now for people who don't have HIV and have access concerns. So what is the Ryan, how many people know who Ryan White is or was? So this is a good group. Most know that he's from Indiana and discovered a very awful discrimination based on this epidemic, which has been going on, as Helene said, for 31 years. So Ryan White was passed in 1990 and originally funded in 1991 to increase care for people living with HIV and AIDS. It's considered a safety net and the payer of last resort for people who are receiving care and services, and I'm going to show you the financial data what we have from Ryan White programs. I do have one little thing I need to say here. A lot of the slides that I'm showing you today on Ryan White are actually from Dr. Laura Cheever, who's the Deputy Director of the HIV/AIDS Bureau at HRSA. So the information should be pretty accurate since it's Laura's work. Whenever you see oral health care bolded, I did that. So funding includes primary care, including medications, antiretroviral medications, mental health, substance use, things of that sort, and oral health care, and has been that way since the beginning, and also trains providers, and that's important for what we do as well. There are about 530,000 uninsured and underinsured people who get care annually. I put some information because the largest category of expense presently for the Ryan White program is the AIDS Drug Assistance Program, which takes up close to $1 billion at this point. And almost half the people who are on antiretroviral therapy in the U.S. get their medications through this remarkably important program. It hits those who are most in need. 72% are minorities, 31% are women, 81.6% are uninsured or underinsured receiving public health benefits, and it matches well with what the CDC reported AIDS cases are. And what Michael Sag was saying in his commentary was we in Ryan White land, I sometimes call it, created a medical home before we were talking about medical homes. We created systems of care under local jurisdiction. No matter where you live in the U.S., you have local input onto how your programs will be formed so you would have the best outcomes. And our outcomes that we're looking for are undetectable viral load and increased CD4 count. So what Michael was saying is, in the light of the changes we're seeing with healthcare reform, we really don't want to destroy the systems that we've put in place, which have already been shown to have great health outcomes. And how are they going to work together? And that's a challenge that we have. If you look at Ryan White clients' income, 67% are within 100% of federal poverty limits. That is remarkable. This is not just a poverty, a disease, or an epidemic of men who have sex with men. This is an epidemic of poor people. And the disease is increasingly hitting minorities and women, especially in the Southeast United States, which is where I live. As you can see, a smaller percentage are with 100 to 200% of poverty. And what we don't have is the available data on 133% of poverty. So when the Medicaid changes go into effect next year, we're really not exactly sure how that's going to impact, because we don't have it at the local level, nor do we have it at the federal level. Just showing the insurance status of Ryan White clients, 25% are uninsured, 28% have Medicaid, and I'm going to talk a little bit about Medicaid dental coverage for adults. 9.3% have Medicare, and then we have 12.7% which are dual eligibles. As we all know, Medicare does not really have an adult dental benefit, and that causes a little bit of a problem. There's no access. And we'll talk about Medicaid because it depends on what state. And regretfully, in California, it usually is a leading trend for what happens to the rest of the United States. And in this case, with adult Medicaid, that benefits, that's actually been a bad thing. The remainder are uninsured, and Ryan White actually does provide some wraparound insurance. But you can see that this is not an insured population, and when it comes to dental insurance, it basically does not exist for this group of clients. So key provisions of Ryan White, it's a payer of last resort. During the 2006 reauthorization, and it was last reauthorized in 2009, there was an emphasis on funding core medical services. I remember I was at actually a big meeting, and somebody told me what the percentage of core medical services is going to be, and I almost lost my breath. Because one of the issues with Ryan White clients is how do you get them into care and maintain them into care, because that's how you get your best outcomes. And if you're spending all of the money on core services, are you going to have enough resources left to ensure retention into care and help people overcome their barriers to care? But it's 75%, 25%. I was so annoying during that part of advocacy that it reads primary care, HIV medications, and then oral health, because I really truly pressed that point home. They sort of flew me up for a special meeting, and they said, David, we got the oral health piece. What do you think about everything else? So it was really sort of interesting during that period of my life. Support services include non-medical, case management, transportation, emergency housing, which is very hard in many communities, child care, food assistance, as you can see. Funding is based on living HIV and AIDS cases that were reported to the CDC. And there's a program structure for this, which has been in place for several years. Part A hits addresses the cities that have been hit hardest by this epidemic, and it's based on cases. So it would be San Francisco is an EMA, Oakland or Alameda County would be a TGA, a transitional grant area. Los Angeles is a city, Atlanta, New York, Chicago, Philadelphia. Your bigger cities is where the Part A, what'd you say?
Boston.
Is where these funds go. All states and territories get Part B funding that can go to the core services as well as covers the AIDS Drug Assistance Program. Part C is community health centers or other free health clinics that provide direct HIV services. And Part D is for women, infants, children, and youth. And that program traditionally hasn't put a lot of funding into dental and is one area that we could actually look for to do some advocacy. Part F programs are, there's two dental specific. There's a dental reimbursement program which pays for uncompensated care provided by accredited dental education institutions. So that could be a dental school, an accredited residency program, an accredited dental hygiene school. There's only one dental hygiene school in the U.S. that I'm aware of that has applied for these funds. And then there are 12 community-based dental partnership programs that literally get the students out of the school environment and put them into the community where people living with HIV and AIDS are so they can learn more about how to manage this population. The AIDS Education and Training Centers, those programs actually include training the big CIS, which are physicians, nurse practitioners, physician's assistants, dentists, dental hygienists, and pharmacists. So we do a lot of training throughout the country on how you manage this patient population. Make it go. Carol's going to talk more about innovations in oral health care. This is based on the SPINS 5-year program that Carol was a PI on, and the Surgeon General's comments are also included in it. She has many handouts to give out here. Where does the money go? As you can see, the largest part of the money goes to Part B, including the ADAP program. Part A gets a significant amount of money, and oral health services do come directly from that. You can see Part C, again, that's another program that is underfunded, but it does provide for oral health care. I mentioned Part D, AETCs do the dental education, and you can see the small amount of money that goes to dental reimbursement. That money has really not increased in the last almost 8 years. It used to be that you would get 66 or 67% on the dollar, cents on the dollar. Now it's 20-something cents on the dollar, so we really need to work around advocacy around that program. Dental coverage, Medicaid is an issue. It's one of the advantages of the Affordable Care Act is that everyone will be covered who's within 133% of poverty. But if you live in my neck of the woods, so to speak, in Georgia, you almost have to be dead before, if you're a single male, to get Medicaid. It's based on disability. It's not based on anything else. And that's why you don't see as many people as who would qualify for Medicaid actually on Medicaid because of disability requirements. Then we talk about Medicaid dental coverage. Comprehensive adult care is available in about 20%, and the number is going down of the states. More than half the states, including my own, only cover emergency care. Some states in my region are no longer even covering extractions. Medicaid programs that offer some oral health benefits may not provide enough coverage to eliminate oral disease. It's always been the victim of budgetary cuts during periods of fiscal retrenchment, and that was my California example, because California, when DentaCal got eliminated here, which was 2000 and when, Carolyn?
Eight.
2008, it was a harbinger of things that were going to happen in other states because of the amount of funds that go to it. So just some more recent examples is Washington State. They had $30 million annually, but then they basically cut all of the adult dental care except for adults with developmental disabilities, long-term care patients, and pregnant women. So they went from covering 488,000 people on their Medicaid program to 38,000 people. So you can see the significant reduction there. In Illinois, a very blue state, I do come from Redland, but this is a very blue state, they eliminated their adult Medicaid dental benefit and also eliminated vision, chiropractic, and podiatry. So you're seeing these optional services, which is a problem, because when you have optional services and there's no money, they're going to cut these services. And how oral health care can be considered an optional service, to me, is a crime. Personal comment. The future of Ryan White. So we're up for reauthorization in September 30th of next year. Full implementation of the Affordable Care Act, no matter what happens next week, we all need to pray, does not eliminate the need for the Ryan White programs. There will be gaps in coverage, and the major gap in my mind, because I'm a dentist, is oral health care. Without Ryan White, I don't know how my program's going to stay open, and programs that I visited throughout the country, I don't know how they will be able to maintain. But also, there's other medications that need to be covered and support services that keep patients in care, which for people with HIV and AIDS is remarkably important. And then you'd also lose it's very important to make sure you have the training of providers, because we're having a healthcare workforce shortage. We're going to be sending a lot of people with HIV AIDS to community health centers that have no history of treating this patient population. Therefore, we need to get them up to speed as soon as we can. So it's September 30th, 2013. Significant portions, including Medicaid expansion, will hopefully be implemented at the first of the year. But there's that Supreme Court ruling that had that little bit of a problem that some states can opt out. And if you look where the disease is, and you look at Louisiana and Texas and Georgia and South Carolina, they're saying they're not going to expand their Medicaid programs. So what happens if you're living with HIV in Georgia and there's no Ryan White, or in Texas and there's no Ryan White? Just based on the politics of where you live should not matter whether or not you live. And that's a very important point. Adult oral health care is not included in Medicaid expansion, although President Obama has hinted that they can use the existing Medicaid programs that are in place. So there might be a chance, if the president's reelected, that we will be able to see some optional dental benefits. And my final slide is that Ryan White reauthorization is critical to maintaining the existing oral health infrastructure for this patient population. The dental public health community, which has championed oral health care for people living with HIV and AIDS since the earliest days of the epidemic, must come together and join in our advocacy efforts to ensure continued access to high-quality oral health care services for uninsured and underinsured people living with HIV and AIDS. For updates on policy, HIV Dent does have a Facebook page, which is specifically used just for policy alerts to let people know what's going on with Medicaid, what's going on with the Affordable Care Act, and what will be going on in the future as we move towards reauthorization. So thank you, and next up.